Go.
How you doing, Bill?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a bit more casual than usual today.
That's good, because I'm usually out-spiffied by you.
Well,
and I have to say, I think that for the past two segments of ours, my smug quotient has been high. I think it's been noted by some of the commenters. But my smug quotient is low this week.
Yes, I guess there was a bit of infighting on the Democratic side, which I guess we'll start off with, because it is almost breaking news as we're taping this, that last night it came out that Samantha Power had said, had called Hillary Clinton a monster in what apparently, you know, David Corn and some other people I've seen have said what she thought was an off-the-record conversation, but it was picked up by a paper called The Scotsman, and Clinton's team, Howard Wolfson in charge, held a conference call with reporters this morning and called for Power's resignation. And about an hour later, Team Obama complied with their request, and Power resigned. And I have to say, as someone who's on the conservative side and would like to see both Clinton and Obama lose, Republicans are just salivating over this. They just can't. They have the popcorn's out, the soda's out. I'm a Milk Duds fan. I'm gonna we enjoy this movie. And we hope it goes on for a long, long time.
Now, to what extent do conservative bloggers think that the Rush Limbaugh factor played here? Did Rush successfully get people in Texas to vote Clinton specifically to upset the apple cart and allow this protracted contest to continue?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, David Wagle's post looking at the exit numbers comparing Wisconsin and Texas, the difference being at the time everyone, it wasn't as established in conservative circles that Hillary Clinton was needed help at the time. It was still, you know, let's stick it to Hillary, as opposed to Texas, where Rush specifically said, you know, conservatives, we need to make this movie run as long as possible, so you need to vote for Hillary. And if you look at the numbers, you'll see that more self-identified conservatives ended up voting for Clinton in Texas than in Wisconsin. So, you know, you could make a plausible case that they helped a bit. Of course, the final delegate counts out of Texas show Obama won, but Hillary still won the popular vote. But, you know, that just shows, again, how undemocratic the Democratic Party is. I find it hilarious to no end that the party that complained about Al Gore winning the popular vote for all these years is now going through a primary process where the winner of the popular vote in each state often doesn't get the most number of delegates.
Well, often's a strong word there. It has happened a couple of times.
It's happened more than once, which,
yeah,
which
more than
for
once.
Those of you who take a logic class knows qualifies as often.
Well, for the record, the larger critique of 2000 is not that the Electoral College upset the popular vote. There are other things that liberals and Democrats are more concerned about as far as 2000 is concerned than that. But, you know, rules are rules, and there's a reason why, in general, these things are the case, and that it's not a straightforward democratic process, either nationally, in the general, or in the primary. There's proportionality here to make sure that certain regions of countries and within states are not disenfranchised. You know, it tends to be affirmative action for smaller, less populated areas. So it's not all that different. I mean, there's obviously lots of nuances in the specifics in these particular contests, but in general, that's the way Electoral College has been constructed, and that plays out sometimes in the states. Although I think in Texas, that's not quite the case in Nevada. When Obama got more delegates is because he was stronger in the less populated areas. In Texas, it's actually because he was stronger in the more populated areas. But rules are rules. And this is fundamentally a delegate contest. And, you know, both Clinton and Obama have acknowledged that. Both Clinton and Obama expect that Obama will have more delegates in the end. So the fact that Obama got more delegates is relevant in that respect. However, because the delegate math is what it is, the only thing that Clinton can really change is the narrative and the psychology and the perception of the race. in hopes of swaying superdelegates to believe that she is more electable in the end than he is. And so winning the popular vote to her was more important than what the actual delegate breakdown was.
Well, we can go ahead and talk about that first, about Hillary's case for staying in there. And I think, you know, since we are kind of blog more focused, we can definitely talk about that. Because, you know, when we go back to, you know, Clinton's advisor, Peter Dow, and his famous, you know, triangles of blog influence.
Pulling out the blog classics.
Right, right. Well, you know, his whole theory was that in order for, you know, to establish conventional wisdom and to influence people's perceptions, you know, you need the three sides of the triangle being one, the net roots putting out their message, you know, two, elected officials and primaries actually in the ring, then being on message and saying those same things, and then three, the media picking that up. And, you know, so Hillary and Obama clearly have these two separate narratives as far as what needs to happen. And I think you're definitely seeing Hillary, you know, use the media as best she can to frame the debate around, you know, I just won Ohio and Texas, I won Pennsylvania, I won the big states. I'm winning all the states that Democrats need to win in order to win the election. You know, it's hard for even Obama to beat McCain if he loses Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Well, I don't know if you saw two things I want to point out. One, as far as the triangle is concerned, and Peter Dow is a friend, and the triangle essay that he wrote is one of the canons of blog posts. But the triangle is not what's happening in the Clinton campaign.
No. You cut me off before I got to how the networks could help Obama. But I was just first laying out what Hillary's message was going to be.
I mean, just so people know, the triangle was the idea that to best influence the media, there is a triangle between net roots, political establishment, and media establishment. If you get the political establishment and the net roots on the same page, you can influence the third leg of that triangle, the media. But the Clinton campaign, for all of Peter's best efforts, you know, the net roots is by no means a singular megaphone on behalf of the Clinton campaign. But they said they are influencing the media. It's a wholly different strategy that they are implementing. The other point that you make about Ohio and Pennsylvania, and this is something that has popped up amongst some liberal blogs the past 24 hours, mine included, at Liberal Oasis, that the Clinton campaign is definitely stressing Clinton's win in Ohio and her expected win in Pennsylvania to say these are key battleground states, big battleground states with older white working class voters. And that is a demographic where Obama is relatively weak. And if he can't win in those states, who cares about his overall delegate count? Who cares if he won in Idaho and North Dakota and Utah? This is what really matters come the general. However, SurveyUSA, which is the polling outfit, it's not as known as a Gallup, but it's actually had quite a good record in these recent contests, did a 50-state poll. Obama versus McCain and Clinton versus McCain. And Daily Kos and Open Left, and those are two that come to mind that did the bigger analysis on it, looked at those numbers. Now, Clinton and Obama both beat McCain in those things, in those trial heats. But Obama, one, has slightly more electoral college votes than Clinton does. Two, he had bigger leads in more states than she did, so it was a stronger base of support. And most interestingly, he had that without Pennsylvania and without New Jersey. He did have Ohio and Michigan in that. But he had, while Clinton won with 20 states and generally more bigger states, Obama had 24 states plus D.C. and a piece of Nebraska, because he was turning the interior West and more of the plains, as well as Virginia, and putting them in play. So as much as Clinton wants to make this all about Ohio and Pennsylvania, Obama now has another talking point saying, hey, it's not we have a broader map, or potentially a broader map with me at the top of the ticket, and if I lose Pennsylvania, that's not a death knell for my electability argument.
Well, you know, I think we're beginning to see where you fall down on this argument, which is fine. I had my suspicions,
well,
I had my suspicions all along. But yeah, I mean, Well, I still believe it. You know, McCain faces an uphill battle, and if elected, I think Obama has a better chance of beating McCain than Hillary does. But I don't think it's going to be through North Dakota and Nebraska, which is what Survey USA says is possible. I think Virginia's
well, the more
Virginia's
important
much more
to me,
likely.
North Dakota and Nebraska are very, very small states, and perhaps that's less likely. But the holy grail in some blogger corners, and this was driven by Tom Schaller, who wrote the book Whistling Past Dixie, and he has blogged a number of different sites, I think most recently at Tapped, that for Democrats to break the Republican hold on the Electoral College, the path is not through the South. It's not through the ways of the past. That region is the highest hanging fruit. But it's the interior West. That is where Democrats have the most chance to break through. And in that Survey USA trial heat, Obama does break through there, specifically in Colorado and New Mexico. And Clinton generally did not. She got New Mexico, but not Colorado, and she lost the Pacific Northwest, whereas Obama held on to that. So that's going to be a good argument for him, that I am able to achieve where the future of the party has to go.
Yes, that is obviously Obama's argument. Hillary's argument, which I guess I'm becoming Hillary's surrogate here, would be that you know, Obama simply is not ready to face, you know, what the coming onslaught from Republicans, and will not be able to realize those gains. And I think, you know, going back to how we first started this conversation with power, is that this is going to be an ongoing story. You know, power apologized, and then Clinton came back, and the statement came out about an hour and a half ago from Hillary Clinton, and I've been scouring MSNBC site and Hillary site to find the statement, because I was listening to it on MSNBC, so I only have part of it here. But she, you know, she says, you know, I think Senator Obama did the right thing, but I think it's important to look at what she and his other advisors have been saying behind closed doors, and then that's her story quote have. But as I remember, she goes on to say, behind closed doors to foreign press and foreign governments. She's very clearly saying, thanks, Obama, for your apology. Now I'm going to talk about NAFTAGATE all over again. I'm going to slam you with that. And I'm going to keep hammering this point home that you're saying different things to different audiences. And this is the narrative that she's going to start building here, is that, you know, Obama is trying to be all things to all people. He's been great. He's been getting fabulous press coverage. That's going to change. And she's going to hit him hard on this. And as, you know, Josh Marshall posts about a couple hours after it, you know, this is exactly what he talks about when this is actually what he means when he talks about, I just put my son down for now, so I'll call it witch slap politics, in that, you know, Hillary Clinton went out there, demanded that Barack Obama fire this woman. Barack Obama gave in. And to say thank you, Hillary slapped them across the face again and brought up NAFTAGATE again. And it's not going to end.
Well, Chio, did she specifically bring up NAFTAGATE again?
No. I'm not saying specifically about it. But the quote was, I think Senator Obama did the right thing, but I think it's important to look at what she does and his advisors say behind closed doors to foreign press and foreign governments. Now, the story of Samantha Power is, of course, what she said, what she thought was confidential to the foreign press. When Hillary Clinton then brings up foreign governments, unless you've been in a cave for the past 2 weeks, you know exactly what she's talking about.
Yeah, I hear you.
So no.
Well, that's going to be an interesting tack for her to take, and I am loath just to be an Obama surrogate here, because that's not really my role. But for the interest of what facts are out there, there are two things about this. One, it's possible that Clinton can overplay her hand here. Obama said he wasn't going to tolerate personal attacks. Someone said something, you know, what she thought was a private moment became public. She took responsibility and apologized and quit within 12 hours. To continue to milk that after an apology, to not accept the apology, to fundraise off the apology, to try to milk more juice out of it.
Oh, yeah, we forgot to mention that. Hillary Clinton already has an email out fundraising off of the Samantha Power monster story.
So
quick turnaround on their part.
Not to say that she's going to get burned on it, but there is a risk there of it being seen as manufactured outrage. And, you know, one of her surrogates said, this is the test for Obama. Well, we passed the test. And Samantha Power passed the test and took responsibility for it, and you're still talking about it. it starts to expose how sincere the outrage was in the first place. Possibly it's
risky. Well, I don't.
To your point though, there is an overarching question that I'm sure a lot of superdelegates have, whether Obama has the mettle to withstand and turn around Republican attacks if he was the nominee, and all the poking and prodding and slapping that's been going on for weeks now. It's not new as of today. This has constantly been the Clinton strategy to try to trip him up. And for the most part, it hasn't worked. For the most part, it's backfired on her. This was the first week where that was really not the case. And now it's re-sparking these questions all over again. And it is a test, whether you find the Clinton approach to be fair or unfair or low road or legit, the bottom line is Obama's going to have to deal with unfair things going forward. And it is a test for him. I think for the most part, he's passed the test, but there are definitely other voters out there and superdelegates that are still asking. And so that's what the next 6 weeks is going to be about.
I would have two responses. First of all, I don't think you're going to see a backlash against Hillary because all this is stuff we already know about her. It's baked into the cake. We know she's, scorched earth, no holds bar attacking. That's what we expect from the Clintons. That's why she has a 52% ceiling. And, that's why she's not, as immensely cool and popular as Obama is. People already know this about her.
But there's something there. I mean, that's one of the reasons why she hasn't done as well as she has. Often when she's gone on the attack, I mean, her strength as an argument is, I'm the better fighter. I know how to deal with the right-wing conspiracy. I've taken them on before. I've beaten them before. I don't wilt under pressure. But a lot of her attacks haven't been that savvy. They've been very crude and erratic. And so when it's done...
Well, I'm going to agree with you there. The Deval Patrick stuff was lame.
Obama completely outperformed the polls after...
The run-up
to Wisconsin, the plagiarist narrative dominated the media, I think, far more than the negative attacks dominated the media leading up to Ohio and Texas, and it backfired 100%.
Well, I think we have to look at the quality of the attacks here. The Deval Patrick story was just stupid. But the Naftagate story goes to the heart of Obama's campaign, which is authenticity. This guy is...
Well, and the NAFTA thing is interesting now, because if Clinton decides to keep pushing this, as you just mentioned she did implicitly in that comment,
right.
The latest news coverage out of that, out of the Toronto Globe and Mail or the Canadian Press, I wasn't sure which exactly, but some blogs picked up one, particularly Talking Points Memo, is that the Clinton campaign had initially reached out to the Canadian government to reassure them they weren't saying what they meant on NAFTA. So, and on top of that, you have the full memo about the Obama aides meeting, the Obama advisors meeting, Austin Goolsbee.
The Goolsbee memo.
That was posted on the Canadian magazine's blog, McLean's. And if you read the full memo, and the Obama team definitely takes issue with some of the paraphrasing that the Canadian side did in that. But the guts of it is really squarely in line with what Obama actually says. He has never said, I'm going to end NAFTA. He says he's going to renegotiate NAFTA and reform it. And that is in the memo, that he wants to change the labor and environmental standards. So if the Clinton campaign pushes this, Obama may be able to say, hey, the full area of what happened between us and the Canadian government is out there. We take issue with this one line in the memo, but the overarching tenor of the memo is actually in line with what we've said, and you haven't come clean about what the Canadian government says about you. So I'll be curious to see if the Clinton campaign wants to keep pushing that tack, because I think it's treacherous ground for them.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see whether or not the NAFTAGATE, Obama's ready to turn the NAFTAGATE story around her on that. It's a complicated story. When people bring it up, they're obviously going to think about, one is, was Obama authentic about it, or was he sending mixed messages? What is his position on NAFTA? But secondly, I want to go back to, the second point I was going to make about this whole Samantha Power incident, which is, you keep saying Barack Obama passed this incident with flying colors
I wouldn't go that far, but I'm saying that a Clinton surrogate said this is a test for Obama,
right,
whether he's going to fire her,
right,
or not. And within 30 minutes, she steps down. So just based on what the Clinton surrogate said, it's hard for them to say, well, now go do something else.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
they did what they asked them to do.
And that's my point, is that from Josh Marshall's witch slap field of politics, Obama failed the test. because the test is the other side is going to come in and set the parameters as to what you can and can't do, and you either say, no, this is BS, you know, and stand behind your woman and say, I'm going to reject this, this witch slapping, or you give in to it. And Obama gave in to it, thus, you know, validating Hillary's narrative that, you know, Samantha Power's, you know, crazy going off and talking, bad-mouthing her, and that this is something that the Obama camp does. Whereas instead, Obama should have said, you know what, you know, this was a bad moment for Samantha, but she's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. She's immensely intelligent. She's helped me so much. I'm sticking by her. This was one bad moment for her. She's staying on my campaign team, and Hillary Clinton's just going to have to get over it. That shows strength. It shows he knows, you know, who Samantha Power is, sticks behind her, sticks behind a woman. All kinds of great narratives coming out of that. And instead, we get Obama caving and Clinton being able to go on and keep talking about her story on her terms. As far as the witch slap period of politics goes, Clinton won this round and Obama failed it big time.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with what Josh Marshall said. If I was in the Obama inner circle, I'm sure I would have been arguing for pushing back and retaining Samantha Power. But I think it goes a step too far to say, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but my gut reaction is this whole flap is almost wholly contained within a single news cycle. I don't even think it's an issue that any average voter really cares about. I think it knocks Obama off message for a day, but it knocks him off a day before Wyoming and Mississippi, which I think he's probably going to win anyway.
True.
And so after that happens, the whole thing probably goes away. And I think it's harder. It definitely would pose a problem if Obama was continually caving to attacks like this and constantly being on the defensive. That would definitely pose a larger problem for him and an inability to set the narrative on his own terms. And so I would say to what Josh Marshall wrote, it raises an eyebrow in that direction, but I think it goes too far to say that this is somehow indicative of how the rest of the campaign is going to go.
But you will at least admit that it's the direction that Hillary wants it to go.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Although I'm sure they would have preferred to have this story be dragged out for a few more days. I don't think they wanted this to be cut off within a 12-hour period. You will probably have a headline about this tomorrow in the Saturday papers. It obviously is on a lot of websites today, so the real hardcore political junkies are reading about it. But I have a really hard time seeing how this goes on beyond that. Now, if Clinton wants to try to build this into a larger narrative about other things,
let me pitch you on how she does that.
If that's resting on NAFTAGATE, I think that's very treacherous for her, and I'm not sure what else she has beyond that to really milk this with.
Well, let me pitch you on how she does that. We've been talking, you know, since the campaign began about Obama's rocky relationship with Netroots, and a lot of that goes to Obama's, you know, more appeasing, seemingly centrist appeal for politics, and he's getting lots of independent other voters on the idea that, you know, he is going to form some kind of center-right coalition. And, you know, earlier in the week, this is a long week, earlier in the week, Obama said that he would probably have Republicans on his cabinet. And, of course, whenever he says stuff like this, Netroots gets all upset. And, you know, Chris Bowers had
Clinton has said the exact same thing.
What?
Clinton has said the exact same thing, by the way.
And Chris Bowers points out that, you know, Obama has been sending, as he's put this, these dog whistles to both progressives and, you know, the kind of center-right elite about what his intentions are when actually governing. And he definitely has been sympathetic within, you know, like there's the New Yorker article where the author says he sounds almost Burkean at times. And, of course, you know, he's got Andrew Sullivan's snowed beyond belief. So there's definitely a sense that Obama is able to, you know, through rhetoric, through talent, put out a signal that he is what people, you know, think he is, that he is, or, you know, people are able to project onto him what they want him to be. And so I think what Clinton's, you know, overall narrative here with the Powers comments, with the NAFTAGATE, is that the pattern of Obama is saying different things to different people in different audiences, and nobody really knows who this guy is. And it's a seed that's already in the Netroots on the left, people who love Obama to begin with. And I think the media is already beginning to pick up on it with these two stories.
Well,
and Clinton's going to run with it.
Don't conflate two things there, because the Netroots as a whole is not fully in the Obama camp, not even close.
Well, we know they've shifted. I mean, Marcos, the Daily Kos is all Obama rocks all the time now.
Kos is, but that's Kos is not the entirety of the Netroots.
True, but I mean, you know, you go to Open Left, you know, Bowers and Stoller both said they're
Bowers, Bowers and Stoller are not in a camp. I mean,
Stoller has already voted for Obama, and
he said so, but he in the next breath he'll criticize Obama the next day, you know. So they're not on the team. They're definitely Open Left is a site which I think is more indicative of. You know, Netroots activists, the more well-read traffic Netroots blog.
If you did
that, hold skepticism towards both Clinton and Obama, and are willing to take pot shots at either of them when they see it's appropriate.
Well, let me say I'm a big fan of Matt Stoller and Chris Bowers, and what I love about them is that they'll call a spade and they'll criticize both sides. However, that does not mean that they're not watching this contest and not pulling for somebody. All I'm saying is that most of the Netroots are, at this point, actively pulling for somebody, and that somebody for the vast majority of them is Barack Obama.
I would not agree with that. That's not my read. I mean, you know, it's hard to generalize the entirety of the blogosphere, but I think there are a lot of blogs out there. Now, granted, you know, I think Kos and a lot of Cossacks on that site are actively pulling for Obama.
Well, I think, let me put it this way.
MoveOn's endorsement was a runaway for Obama, but there are a lot of blogs out there that I think have gotten more jaded. They don't think that either one of them is pure as the driven snow. They see strengths and weaknesses in both of them, and they're more focused on how lame the media is and how awful John McCain is, more so than they are trying to cheerlead for one campaign over the other right now.
Well, I will agree there's not a ton of cheerleaders, but my larger point is that people are pulling for somebody, and that does color a little bit their analysis when they do come out. Like, I mean, if you go to Memorandum on any day, and it's obvious, you know, which stories are kind of more pro-Clinton and which stories are more pro-Obama, and you look at which blogs are, you know, harping on the anti-Hillary stories and which blogs are hyping on the anti-Obama stories, you can get a pretty good sense of where everybody is. You know, Talk Left, Taylor Marsh, they're kind of more in the Hillary camp. But, you know, on the other hand, you've got, you know, Matt Iglesias, America Blog, of course, Daily Kos. Most of the larger blogs, the vast majority of them, are more Obama.
Continue, sir. I interrupted your point.
No. I think you know that was just the end of that point. That you know the Netroots are.
You're on the way of saying something else.
Oh, I completely forgot what before you interrupted what my point on that was. Other than the fact that, you know, as Bowers is saying, that, you know, this is a narrative that's going to get picked up by the media, and Hillary's going to run with it, and you're already going to think that you already see that happening.
Jury's out in my book. I think there's a lot of twists and turns here to go. I don't think that Hillary has got a lock stock grip on that narrative. Yeah, she's definitely trying to. I mean,
oh no, there's definitely work to do. But I'm just saying it's developing.
And it's a classic. I mean, the classic move here, whatever it is, the upstart versus the established candidate, is what do you really know about the new guy? You know, where's the beef? You know, it's the standard tactic, and sometimes the standard tactic can work. For the most part, it hasn't. It did this week. She's trying to drive it to some extent, but I think the Obama team has to kind of regroup a little bit. But they're going to have about 6 weeks to recruit. So because the Samantha Power thing went the way it did, I don't extrapolate that out to say this is all going to fall apart Obama today. I don't think that. I mean, I think that campaign has been so well run up to this point and has been so well managed. You do not see the kind of turf battle, sniping, dirty laundry being aired that you see on the Clinton side so many times. You don't see the same sorts of shifts in tone that you see on the Clinton side, that I would be surprised to see the Obama team all of a sudden run out of gas and run out of answers. That doesn't strike me as the way this campaign has gone so far.
No, they've been very professional, but as much infighting as there is, there's still a lot of talent on Hillary's side to move her message out there.
There's no doubt about that.
So what do you think should be done about this Florida-Michigan mess? What's your favorite policy?
Well, it should be a redo. I think a redo is the obvious thing to do.
Who's going to pay for it?
Well, that's, you know, you get into the sticky wicket of how do you pull it off. But obviously the redo is the fair thing to do. I thought, you know, as much as I'm not a, I don't usually go out my way to praise Wolf Blitzer, I think he had a strong point to the Governor Chris in Florida saying, you know, why don't you pay for it? You're going to make more money than you spend with all the economic activity you're going to generate by having a primary caucus there. And Jack Cafferty rightly noted that it was Chris who signed the bill in the first place.
Yeah, well,
the Republican, full well that it was
the Republican legislator
is
never going to write a $10 million check to the Democratic Party. So that ain't going to happen. What's Plan B?
I don't know what Plan B is. It's not my job to figure out what Plan B is. But I would imagine someone's going to figure this out. They'll chip in some money. Perhaps a combination of the National Party and the State Party and the campaigns will chip in money. I can't believe it won't get done. It's not really in anybody's interest to have these contests not happen. There is no way that Clinton's fantasy is going to happen where the delegations get seated as is and become the determining factor who wins the nomination. That will never, ever, ever happen.
Well, it can't happen mathematically anyways.
What's that?
They can't mathematically be the determining factor anyways.
Well, if she managed to wrap enough superdelegates to the point where they would be the tipping point, or could potentially get them close to the finish line, yeah, that's just not going to happen. That would be an absolute utter disaster, and the credentialing committee of the DNC, I can't believe, would ever allow it to happen. So it's in Clinton's interest to hopefully get something out of Florida and Michigan, and the only way you're going to get that is to have the redo. And certainly Florida and Michigan want to have their delegation seated. And Obama, I'm sure, would be happy to contest in those states, particularly in Michigan, where some polling shows that he'd be stronger, and make a case that he can do well in the industrial Midwest again. So I think it's in everybody's interest to do it. I imagine it will get done. And I think there's very little that bloggers can do on the subject.
Well, I guess I would disagree on that. There's nothing the bloggers can do on the subject. I definitely feel they can help frame the debate as far as what needs to be happened and what's fair. But my only prediction would be is that you're not going to see any concrete plans until after Pennsylvania, because the math is just as far as whether or not Barack Obama needs to lift a finger to help this process is, you know, completely determined by, you know, whether or not he wins Pennsylvania or not. Because right now, of course, he wants it the way it is. Howard Dean has said, you know, the way it is right now, no one's getting seated. The only way people are going to get seated is for, for a redo to happen. And, of course, since Obama has the delegate read like now, he's fine with the status quo. Status quo suits him fine. So, you know, if he goes ahead and knocks out Hillary in Pennsylvania, then he's, you know, going to be under no pressure at all to help the voters of Michigan and Florida out, and he'll just let it, you know, just run out the clock. But if he
beat Clinton in Pennsylvania, this is probably the first contest in a very long time where the expectations bar is on Obama's side. That hasn't happened in a very long time.
Well, no, Ohio and Texas. Hillary had to win both those states to go on.
Well, that was a case where the Clinton campaign set a bar. They set a high bar for themselves there, right, with Bill Clinton.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, the Chuck Todd of the world had already set that bar for them before Bill Clinton said it. I mean, it did solidify when Clinton said it. But, you know, let's not pretend that this is the first time Clinton has had a test to pass. I mean, Ohio and Texas were make or break.
The slight difference is there was more of a contest in Texas, where it did not seem as clear who had the leg up. It wasn't a low bar for Obama to clear. It was a bar set, you know, in the middle for both of them, and Clinton got the edge in popular voting, and Obama got the edge in delegates, which I think, in as far as the media narrative is concerned, is a better result for Clinton. Pennsylvania, I think, is going to be unique in that it's one contest on one day where the bar is indisputably set high for Clinton and low for Obama. So if Clinton wins, it bolsters her argument that she's more electable in these Rust Belt states, although I think Obama has a counter-argument to give to that. But if Obama wins that, that completely blows apart what's left of Clinton's argument to remain in the race despite the fact that she's short on delegates.
Yeah, we're agreed. Pennsylvania's make or break for Hillary.
So in that scenario, Florida, Michigan don't matter anymore.
Right.
If Obama wins that.
Right. But what I'm saying is I don't think you're going to see Obama investing any time or resources thinking about the Florida, Michigan problem until he knows if he has to after Pennsylvania. So mm-hmm. I'm just saying it, as far as Florida, Michigan, it's all going to be a parlor talk until after April 22nd. And then we might see some actual action going forward.
Interesting. I'm curious to see if the bloggers in Florida and Michigan can have an impact there. I do know the folks at MichiganLiberal.com. I interviewed one of them on my radio show. They were livid at the state for moving up the primary in the first place and foresaw what a disaster that was going to be. So I wonder if they have the street cred now to school these people and say, look, you have to clean up the mess that you made.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is that you are seeing more appeals from the netroots to get the media involved to kind of crush Hillary narratives. I'm seeing more and more open letters at Daily Kos to fellow Daily Kos regular Keith Olbermann to use his perch on his nightly show to do a special commentary with Hillary as the target as opposed to Bush. So I think you are going to see especially from the bigger, more activist sites, the one that definitely are strongly pulling for someone like Daily Kos, more pressure on the media.
Argument about where the netroots is. I don't think you're seeing the netroots really put themselves in the Obama camp and be an appendage of the campaign. But I do think you are seeing a desire on some blogs to set some sense of boundaries and ground rules, and I think everyone expects things to be a fight. Most bloggers are partisan in nature and don't get squeamish with things get rough and tumble. They want to see how campaigns perform in that environment, but they're very skittish about things being said that are going to give ammo to the Republican Party down the line. And there was, I think, widespread consternation when Clinton said that I have the experience to be commander in chief. John McCain has the experience to be commander in chief. And Barack Obama, I don't know, you have to ask him. All he's got is a speech from 2002. Apparently, he had no lifetime experience before that.
Yeah, no, that quote was all over the conservative blogs, and I think one guy, Red State, said, Hillary, just keep talking.
Right, and so that stuff definitely gets uniform disapproval from blogs, and to the extent that they are trying to influence the parameters of the race, I think that's where they're trying to draw the line. Don't never say something about your opponent to explicitly argue that they are worse on something than John McCain. That is considered a no-no, period. And again, they're not in the Obama camp, per se. If Obama did something like that, I guarantee you they would criticize him just as much. And in fact, there was criticism of Michelle Obama when she intimated that she wouldn't necessarily support Clinton if she was the nominee. There was definitely some grousing about that. So I think that is a uniform standard for everybody.
I actually, that's the first I've heard of that comment.
That was several weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Did you have your camera out for posterity on the McCain-Bush meeting so you could savor that moment?
Well, I want it for history. I want to put it up in my foyer. Something to look on wistfully. I think there's one commenter that said this is probably the best day for McCain to have that meeting.
Right.
Everyone's all distracted with Obama versus Clinton.
Yes, it was one of those meetings where everyone knew what had to happen. And it was about as low key as it could possibly be.
Are the conservative blogs? Did they raise an eyebrow at Bush's tenor and demeanor at that meeting? It seemed, if I may say, Bill Clintonian, his inability to shut up.
He did keep interrupting McCain and answering his questions for him.
Right. I mean, it did not put McCain up on a pedestal.
No. I think, for the most part, conservatives are fine with that. Bush hasn't been terribly popular among conservative bloggers for a while now. For some of them, it was Harriet Myers. For a lot of them, it was immigration. So they're quite ready for W to be moved off the stage. So they were, there was not a lot of commentary about the meeting other than to say, I think the line was, from the meeting was, George Bush has a busy schedule. He's gonna help out, as much as the schedule allows. And, of course, everyone was like, well, thank God we all know that that means he's not going to be on the trail much. So, you know, not a lot of reaction other than the fact that, you know, thank God W's tenure is almost over.
No concern that even if he's not side-by-side with McCain all the time, that just that he's not going to use his bully pulpit in the most productive of ways?
Wait, see, I just challenged the assumption behind your question that he has an effective bully pulpit.
I mean, you're the president, you have a bully pulpit. That's unavoidable. When you speak, it becomes news. Anytime he speaks in
yes,
a way that...
Yes, but you're assuming it's effective. It's true, every time you speak, it becomes news. That doesn't mean it becomes positive news.
Well, that's my point. I mean, is there concern that he is not going to be a positive impact going forward based on how he handled that meeting?
Oh, no one's saying this is a great environment for Republicans. You know, conservative bloggers are well aware of the fact that, you know, there's an unpopular war, the economy is going downturn, and the sitting president of our party is at 34%. No one is
in agreement that the economy is in downturn?
What?
Are conservatives in agreement that the economy is in a downturn?
The headlines don't help. Ben Bernanke going up on the Hill saying a bunch of banks are going to fail doesn't help. There's definitely a perception out there that the economy is heading south, and that, you know, that doesn't help.
That's all a media conspiracy, I thought. That's not actual economic data.
Well, a media and Ben Bernanke conspiracy.
So you're saying with that in mind, you know, whether Bush shoots his mouth off once or twice is not as important as the larger environment that he's created.
Right. You know, I mean, yes, basically, it's one of those instances where we're eager for him to get off the stage, and so the message from that, you know, very low key endorsement was, I'm going to be off the stage, and everyone said that's great.
And is there any? I mean, obviously, you're very heartened that the Democratic race is being protracted, but are people looking at the way McCain is handling himself and saying, okay, I'm getting more comfortable with how he's approaching this race. He wants to have a clear ideological contrast with the eventual Democratic nominee. He's not tacking leftward on key issues, so let's rally behind him now, or is there still some bruised feelings?
No. I mean, you know, Ann Coulter is going to go on TV and shoot her mouth off because she has to sell books. But, you know, for the most part, everyone, you know, kind of gets what the game is. When the game is Hillary Clinton attacks Barack Obama, McCain attacks Barack Obama,
Obama is now starting to lump the two of them together, which is interesting.
Right. Conservatives are going to go ahead and play along with that. I mean, that's why you have Rush Limbaugh telling Republicans to go vote for Hillary in Texas. We know what the game is, and we're more than happy to both play along. Ann Coulter side.
Alrighty then. Shall we leave it there?
We will leave it at Ann Coulter.
Great to talk to you.
See you in 2 weeks, Phil.
Take care.
Bye.